Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, France 24, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Indian Prime Minister Modi has been in Moscow meeting with Putin about boosting trade and a path to peace in Ukraine. Hungarian Prime Minister Orbán, current president of the European Union, has been meeting with Chinese President Xi, discussing ending the fighting in Ukraine. Orbán also visited Putin, which was heavily criticized by some EU leaders. Members of the Japanese Group for the Abolition of Nuclear Weapons pled with their government to take actions to influence members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty to implement their obligation under the treaty. NHK Japan.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been in Moscow to meet with Vladimir Putin, calling the Russian president his dear friend. Putin hosted Modi to explore how to further cooperation in business, technology, and security. He says trade between their countries increased last year by more than 60%, a partnership he called specially privileged. And he thanked Modi for maintaining ties throughout the conflict in Ukraine.
I am grateful to you for the attention you pay to the most pressing problems, including trying to find ways to resolve the Ukrainian crisis.
Modi told Putin they need to find a path to peace as soon as possible. He said he's ready to help in any way.
Solutions are not possible on battlegrounds. Amid bombs, guns, and bullets, solutions and peace talks do not succeed.
Modi also broached the plight of Indians tempted to take support positions in the Russian army, then forced into fighting in Ukraine. He secured a promise to have them discharged.
The leaders of Hungary and China are exchanging praise for their work to try to end the fighting in Ukraine. Hungary took over the EU presidency this month, and Prime Minister Viktor Orbán has been focused on what he calls a peace mission. The leaders met Monday in Beijing. China's foreign ministry quotes President Xi Jinping as saying an early ceasefire and a political settlement are in the interests of all parties. He also reportedly said China and Hungary are largely on the same page regarding how to respond to the conflict, and Beijing is willing to stay in touch with all relevant parties. Orbán says China is a key power in creating the conditions for peace in the war between Russia and Ukraine. Orbán traveled to Kyiv last week for talks with President Volodymyr Zelensky. He visited Moscow days later to meet with President Vladimir Putin. Orbán is known for having some of the friendliest relations with Russia compared to his European counterparts. Ukrainian leaders criticized Orbán for that visit. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen did too, saying appeasement will not stop Putin.
A group of atomic bomb survivors and NGOs has urged Japan's government to take concrete action toward the abolition of nuclear weapons ahead of next year's 80th anniversary of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Representatives of the Japan NGO Network for Nuclear Weapons Abolition handed a letter requesting action to a senior foreign ministry official in Tokyo on Tuesday. The letter makes a 5-point request to the Japanese government ahead of a meeting this month in Switzerland of the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or NPT. The group members called on the government to urge nuclear powers to implement their obligation under the treaty to take part in nuclear disarmament negotiations. The group also wants the Japanese government to stress the importance of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons. 5 major nuclear powers and countries that fall under the U.S. nuclear umbrella, including Japan, have not joined the treaty.
Those reports are from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They are now heard at 10 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. All the times they announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The cost of the current U.S. nuclear weapon development has increased to $160 billion. In New York City, 46 climate campaigners were arrested at a peaceful protest against increased investments in fossil fuel expansion. Keir Starmer, the new UK Prime Minister, is emphasizing the need for a ceasefire in the war on Palestine. Jeremy Corbyn won a seat in the parliamentary elections as an independent candidate. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The cost of a U.S. nuclear missile development program have gone above what was estimated, reaching around $160 billion. This according to a report. Reuters quoted three sources familiar with the cost of an Air Force program aimed to replace America's aging nuclear missiles that the price tag for the project has risen from $95.8 billion to $160 billion. The new project, named the Sentinel Intercontinental Ballistic Missile, the ICBM program, is designed and managed by the Virginia-based leading provider of manned air systems, Northrop Grumman Corporation. Both Northrop and Pentagon declined to comment on the latest figure. However, the Pentagon said a new estimate of the cost of the project will be released on Tuesday. U.S. Air Force top brass insists the project is crucial for maintaining the United States' global military deterrent. The past decade has rendered American boasts of global military supremacy so false and obsolete that it now reveals their amateurism, jingoism, or both. U.S. arms manufacturers have been asked to advise the Pentagon on the costs of a service life extension program for the existing inventory of Minuteman III missiles, this according to documents seen by Reuters. Two of the sources familiar with the matter said the increased costs are putting pressure on other Air Force priorities, such as the Next Generation Air Dominance Fighter Jet program. Hypersonic weapons development, various space initiatives such as Star Wars, and the manufacture of the new B-21 Raider stealth bomber capable of carrying a nuclear payload could be affected by the increased costs, according to the sources. Hundreds of millions of dollars of the U.S. military budget are allocated to sending weapons to Ukraine and Israel and pushing back against China's plans in the Indo-Pacific region.
In New York City, police arrested 46 elder climate campaigners as they staged a nonviolent civil disobedience protest near City Group's Manhattan headquarters. Among those arrested was Bill McKibben, founder of the climate justice group 350.org. Organizers from the Summer of Heat Activist Network are demanding City and its investment in fossil fuel expansion. A recent report found City provided more than $200 billion in financing for new fossil fuel projects since the Paris Climate Agreement was signed in 2015.
The United Kingdom's new Prime Minister has emphasized the need for a ceasefire and a two-state solution in calls with Israeli and Palestinian leaders, as Israel has shown no indication to stop its devastating war that has killed more than 38,000 people. Keir Starmer told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of a, quote, clear and urgent need for a ceasefire, the return of hostages, and an immediate increase in the volume of humanitarian aid reaching civilians, unquote. As the opposition leader, Starmer had been accused of not calling for a ceasefire, taking the same line as Conservative Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. He called for a ceasefire in February after intense public pressure, months after proposing a ceasefire resolution in the UK Parliament. He was also accused of denying tickets to some pro-Palestinian members of the Labour Party, including former party chief Jeremy Corbyn. At least five pro-Palestinian candidates, including Corbyn, won the elections as independents. Starmer was widely criticised for saying, quote, Israel has a right to cut water and electricity supplies to Gaza on an NBC podcast since October. A Labour leader spokesperson denied Starmer justified water and power blockade, saying his comment was in response to a question on Israel's right to defend itself. More than 38,000 Palestinians have been killed, mostly children and women, in the Israeli military offensive launched October 7th. More than 87,000 people have been injured and thousands are missing. According to a statement by the new British government, the Prime Minister added that, quote, it was also important to ensure the long-term conditions for a two-state solution were in place, including ensuring the Palestinian Authority has the financial means to operate effectively.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. On to France 24. A series of press reviews. First, the election in the UK, which saw Keir Starmer and the Labour Party sweep for the first time in 14 years. Then several press reviews on the defeat of the National Rally, the far-right party in France, by combining the so-called far-left coalition with the centrist party of President Macron. The National Rally, however, ended up winning 140 seats, up from 89, the most of any non-coalition party. France 24.
Landslide for the Labour Party, ending, of course, 14 years of Tory rule. Take us through the front pages.
The Daily Mirror, unequivocally a Labour-supporting paper, has the headline, Here We Go, with the Labour Party leader and future Prime Minister beaming on the front page. The Daily Star also making no bones about where its loyalties lie. They've got the headline, 14 years in charge. Those good bits in full. And if you look at the illustration, you can see that apparently the editorial team looked for the Tory achievements and came up empty. The last three Tory prime ministers pictured at the bottom, Boris Johnson dressed up as a clown and Liz Truss as a lettuce. That's, of course, a reference to a historically short premiership, which failed to outlast a wilting lettuce. The Sun has this front page, Britain sees red. And the reason why this is of interest is just that The Sun is a Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid, historically hasn't backed Labour since the Blair years, really. So it was a real change this year to see Murdoch papers backing Labour. The Times, also a Murdoch paper, exit polls put Labour on course for a landslide. Once again, this is where we add that these exit polls are rapidly becoming results. Daily Express and the Daily Mail both are Tory-supporting papers. Crushing blow to Tory party in election wipeout on the Daily Express. Labour set for historic landslide on the Daily Mail. The Telegraph, which is also a right-wing paper, is also picking up on the fact that there is a likely Tory leadership race ahead. Rishi Sunak is likely to resign after this, and one of the stories we're going to need to pay attention is which senior Conservatives will survive this election to maybe take over the show after Rishi Sunak stands down.
We all know that thanks to those strategic voting tactics, the far-right were denied a win in the second round of parliamentary elections in France on Sunday. Instead, the greatest surprise, really, the left-wing coalition pulling off an improbable victory. And
Let's take a look at how the press is reacting to these election results.
It's a bit of a coup, as we know, this result. Extremely unexpected. Let's start with the left-wing press, who are jubilant. Libération has on its front page, c'est ouf, that means it's amazing. And you've got this picture, as you see, of République, that square, best known for protests, this time serving as a place of celebration for supporters of the new Popular Front, and most importantly, more widely, opponents of the far-right national rally. The communist paper, L'Humanité, also jubilant. You've got this image of the great wave of Kanagawa labelled Popular Front, tinted red, and it says, hope is reborn. Once again, making no bones about partisanship. La Dépêche du Midi, another left-wing paper, and in the end, it's the left that wins. And further down in the smaller print of this front page, we've obviously got these absolutely triumphant people waving French flags. You have, in the text, it says it's beyond anything that was hoped for. La Croix, also on the left side of the spectrum, has this young woman in Lyon draped in a French flag and smiling with the headline, France says no to the national rally. In the more right-wing press, we have Les Echos, the front page. Let's zoom in nicely on this very sad face of Jordan Bardella. La claque, that means he's been hit, in short. He's in despair. He's occupying a lot of the front page. His party not just denied the absolute majority, also the relative majority, and they've come in behind the left and the centrist bloc that looked absolutely decimated just last week. Le Figaro, you've got a troubled, brooding president on the front page. The national rally faced with failure and the left imposed on Macron. You can imagine why he might be making that face. He's not really sure where that leaves him. A month after dissolving parliament, it says the president is reaching the end of a trying democratic episode, faced with an ungovernable assembly, got a surprise victory for the NFP and cold shower for the RN. And you've got Marine Le Pen there, all on her own, faced with all of these figures opposite, who are slightly bigger, reflective of the results. L'Opinion, a right-wing paper as well, inelegible assembly and an unfindable majority. And you've got a cartoon of former President François Hollande jumping out of a jack-in-the-box, startling a shocked Emmanuel Macron. These two men have a complex backstory, and it's fair to say they're not the best of friends nowadays. The idea of the left and the centre was to create the so-called Republican Front, and that was that if your left-wing candidate pulled out, they would encourage their voters to vote for the centrist, and they would block the national rally that way, and that operated in both directions. And it seemed they did that. There's this piece in the Parisien that's got this survey that, so you can see, I mean, I won't get too much into the details, but essentially, people who voted left in the first round, were three quarters of them were willing to go out and vote centrist in the second round if their left-wing candidate had pulled out to leave space for a victory for the centre. And vice versa, to a slightly lesser extent, centrist voters, it was more like half and half whether or not they would go and vote for the left-wing candidate. And it also, of course, made a difference whether it was France Unbowed or the more centrist socialists or Greens.
French politics continuing to dominate the international press as well.
Yeah, that's right. French politics has learned a new word. That's what the New York Times says. Ungovernable. Indeed, we are sort of in uncharted territories now. It notes that instead of waking up to a far-right victory on Monday, France woke up to the reality of being Italy, a country where only painstaking parliamentary negotiation may eventually yield a viable coalition. The Guardian, the British Daily's editors today in their coverage also note that the results may be satisfactory for those wanting to keep the far right at bay. However, the elections have created a mess for which Emmanuel Macron is responsible. His role now is to take note of his responsibility and humbly allow the centre-left to set the political compass in the country.
Sunday night in the National Rally headquarters was a sombre mood. They were hoping to win a majority and instead they came in third, left wondering what went wrong when victory had seemed so close. The party included candidates like Ludovine Dowdy, who withdrew after a photo circulated of her wearing a Nazi cap, and Daniel Grenon, who caused outrage by declaring that people born in Northern Africa and raised in France had no place holding high positions. Critics have also pointed to the unconvincing performance of many National Rally candidates, saying they appeared out of their depth in debates during the campaign. The party was also unable to expand its base. It struck a deal with Eric Ciotti, the Republican leader, but not the party, who cut ties with him when he proffered an alliance between the two. Still, there were major wins for the party. With over 140 seats, they were up sizably from their previous high of 89 and took home the most seats of any single party.
Those press reviews were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. They're also available at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this program like a generous listener in Athens, Georgia did this week, you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. There's also a link for online support available at my website, outfarpress.com. Many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show airborne. Please, keep it up. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. After bombing Palestinian refugees sheltering in tents next to a United Nations school, killing dozens of civilians, Israel has ordered everyone to leave Gaza City. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The Israeli army has urged all residents of Gaza City to leave. It's dropped leaflets showing escape routes from the city. Israel has been stepping up its ground assault and airstrikes on Hamas militants, with often deadly consequences for civilians.
The human cost of another Israeli airstrike in Gaza. Palestinian medical officials say dozens were killed after missiles hit the tents of displaced families camped outside a UN-run school in Abassan, a town near Khan Yunis.
We were by the school gates. I went out to get things for my children when the strike happened. A huge explosion. People were flying in all directions. There were no ambulances. They took about an hour to arrive.
Israel's military told the Reuters news agency it was looking into the incident. It says it was targeting Hamas forces in the area. Those at the scene of the strike stressed that the victims were civilians.
Suddenly and without prior warning, rockets were fired towards a few people who were using the internet signal there. They weren't fighters, they didn't have weapons, and they weren't involved in any resistance operations. They were civilians, and mostly children.
These pictures show the extent of the devastation in Khan Yunis after Israel's campaign in the area. Part of its response to the Hamas October the 7th terror attack on southern Israel that authorities say killed around 1,200 people and saw hostages taken. This latest airstrike has come as the two sides resume efforts to secure a ceasefire and hostage release. Hamas has warned that Israel's renewed ground assault and bombardment could jeopardize talks.
For more, we can cross over now to our correspondent in Jerusalem, Tanya Kramer. Tanya, Palestinian officials say at least 25 people were killed in the airstrike on that school. The Israel Defense Forces say they're reviewing reports that civilians were harmed. What more do we know at this point?
Well, we know from the Israeli army, that's what they usually put out in a statement they put out overnight, that basically they're saying they targeted a Hamas militant who took part in the October 7 attacks, among other things, and saying, as you said, that they're looking into the report that civilians were harmed in this strike. Now, we know from the Gaza Health Ministry that among the victims there were women and children. They were taking shelter at this school. It's also was not the first time a school or a tent city where, you know, people are taking shelter, seeking shelter, has been hit. And they also said, health services there, that casualties are expected to rise from there. In addition to that, we are seeing heavy bombardment in Gaza City, where people in the eastern parts and in central Gaza were asked or ordered by the military to leave the area, moving further west. The Palestinian Red Crescent has said they have difficulties to reach the wounded and injured people. Also, some hospitals have evacuated to other hospitals. Of course, they're all not fully functioning, so it's not an easy task for them. Now, the military has indicated earlier in the year that they had Gaza City under control, but clearly not. They're saying that Hamas and other militant groups, from their point of view, are regrouping. So that means that thousands are again displaced. Many have stayed in Gaza City, moving from neighborhood to neighborhood, but some are saying they're staying put where they are because it's simply too dangerous right now to move somewhere else in Gaza City, because any safety there is elusive.
What about ceasefire negotiations, Tanya? Egyptian media are reporting that talks will continue in Doha and Cairo this week, but could these latest Israeli airstrikes end up jeopardizing those talks?
Well, we heard from Hamas, they've been saying that these latest developments, especially also what is going on in Gaza City, could return the negotiations to point zero. And as you said, those negotiations are underway. At the moment, we're expecting today a four-way meeting in Doha, in Qatar, between the Israeli, American, Qatari and Egyptian officials. In Doha, we also have Hamas, they have a bureau there. Now, this meeting is seen here as crucial. It comes after a meeting in Cairo, because they're saying, from what we're hearing from sources here, that this is a meeting to take stocks. What are the disagreements? Still, we heard there's some progress, but we also heard from Israeli officials now saying that Egyptian optimism is a bit premature, and that long and complex and difficult negotiations are ahead in the coming weeks. And of course, also domestically, we have to say, we have been hearing from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, ambiguous statements. He had put out five principles that are non-negotiable, which have been seen by some as further complicating those talks. And also his far-right coalition partners have said they don't want to see such an agreement, and they would leave the government if such an agreement would be closed.
Tanya, thank you very much. Our correspondent Tanya Kramer there in Jerusalem.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as at most podcast sites. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 28th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm still recuperating from spinal injury, I'm staying in a house that's connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.